This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 562, brought to you by Geek Fuel and iFanboy listeners just like you.
Blue moon, blue moon, blue moon, keep shining bright. Keep on shining bright, you're gonna bring me back on my baby tonight. Blue moon, keep shining bright. I say blue moon, I can talk to you, keep on shining.
Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 562. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
And Ron Richards.
You know, just like Elvis.
Just like him.
Exactly. Unmistakably the same. We are iFanboy, and just like Elvis, we like comics. We read a bunch of comics. One of us picks their favorite book. We call it the Pick of the Week. We'll talk about that book, other books. We'll talk about some other stuff. And just like Elvis, we'll read your listener mail. It'll be fun. Spoiler warning, it's a review show. There'll be some spoilers. Exercise some caution. Ron, you had the pick of the week.
What people don't realize is that Elvis Presley was a huge comic book fan.
You know, I don't know if that's true or not.
It totally could be. It could be.
In this new world, who cares what's true or not? Let's just talk about Elvis and his comic fandom.
And he's a fan of The Flash. He loves the Justice League. He's a big Silver Age guy.
What did he feel about Mark Miller?
He loves Kaniger. I just
want to point out that we don't understand either, listeners. You're wondering, what's going on? Did I miss something? You haven't.
I would like to think Mark Miller is a fan of Elvis as well. But
Scott Snyder is.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And
Greg Capullo drew this book, and there's your 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon. There you go. All right. So Reborn number 2 was pick of the week this week, written by Mark Miller with art by Greg Capullo. And we had talked favorably about the first issue when it came out. And if you had missed that first issue, this is the series that seems to be mostly fantasy tale by Miller and Capullo, continuing the lighter side of Mark Miller that we're seeing in his later years of his career. As in the first issue, we got introduced to our main character as we see her entire life to the point where she dies. And then she finds out she is reborn in this vast world of fantasy. And she meets her father, who's a warrior. And we find out that she is the warrior that this land has been waiting for. She's going to help liberate them from the evil in this world, which is cool and a great premise for the book. But then the second issue got to me. and we're gonna get a little personal. And
Was it the dog?
It was the dog. It was
really
yes.
You don't anyway.
So we find out a little more about what this world is as her father introduces it to her and explains that it's, you know, 10 times the shape of Earth, and that basically this is where you go after you die, and basically good people go to Adstria, the town where they are, and then the Darklands are where bad people go, and there's a direct correlation between how you behave in our world on Earth to where you end up in this world after you die. And furthermore, everyone you know is there somewhere. And while many of them are in Adstria, I can't say that word.
I'm looking at the letters and I'm just like, yeah. Keep talking, Ron.
Adystria.
Adystria.
While there are a lot of people in Adystria, the world is so vast that it's not guaranteed that everyone you know will be there to greet you. Like,
hey,
in this
where's
book.
Bob? I don't know.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him.
In fact, her father's mother, he still hasn't found her. Her father, right. I'm sorry.
Her mother, her father's wife.
Yes, her father's wife, her mother has not been found yet. Her husband has not been found. There's still other people out there. So there's this idea of this vast adventure waiting for them to find your loved ones.
Do either of you think that her husband's going to be in the Darklands?
Well, yeah. I hadn't occurred to me that those characters that they keep mentioning might show up.
Yeah.
You know what else? I think the Darklands probably way more fun.
I mean,
better music.
Yeah.
All the artists.
Yeah.
All the fun people. I mean, we had another book this week, Doctor Strange, which also dealt with the afterworld, yeah. And how much more fun the hell portion of it is, because those where all the musicians and artists are. But
right, yeah, that's a good point.
Interesting theme going on here.
But so the what got me in this book is, and those of you who know me know that I do not like the animals. I'm not a big fan of pets.
That is not true.
I'm not a big fan of dogs and
not
cats.
True.
Well, I'm not a big fan of cats, period. They're just their Satan's spawn army.
Half the audience has just turned on you like you declared a political allegiance now.
I don't care.
You know, just like Elvis.
Just like Elvis. But I have a hard time with pets. And like Connor pointed out, that is not true at all. In fact, I do like dogs. But my problem is that their lifespan does not match ours, and the end of a pet's life is one of the most horrible things I've ever experienced. And so I don't want to experience it. But
so you're like Scrooge.
Yes,
you're not. You don't actually not like pets. You're just
he likes them so much that he's blocked it out. Yes,
it just hurts. It hurts too much. It hurts. Yeah. So. But in this book, her father is walking around with what is very close to Battle Cat from
yes,
He-Man,
yes.
A dog with a saddle and armor.
It's different. It looks yeah. like a Battle Cat, but it's a dog.
But it's a dog. And he reveals that, in fact, this is her old pet, Roy Boy. And we get a little flashback to her playing with the little puppy dog. And she's very happy because her pet is back and he still smells the same. And at that point, I started crying.
Oh.
Smell, huh?
Well, just everything.
No,
And so, you know, and so it was that.
I did not think this was going to go in this direction.
No, neither did I. But so it was that combined with the added details about this world. Later in the book, they go to find someone who might be able to help them find her husband, who turns out to be her old childhood friend, who in Earth was a very devout religious person, and when she arrived in this afterlife to find out that there was no God and was no Jesus, she became very sour and doesn't care about people, which I was like, wow, that's actually a plausible, like, yeah, it's like, she's like, why did I spend my whole life being a good person when it didn't matter? And you get the, you know, and so now she lives in a palace on top of a tree and has power, but will not help her old friend, even, you know, despite being reunited. And she's also very large. I don't know how she got very large, very tall, not fat, but but
tall,
so those two
cover it.
She's a giant.
A giant. Yeah, she's a giant. Yeah, exactly.
It's not like she's 7 foot 2 inches. She's the size of a small building.
Yep. And so I really, really, really like the rules that Miller is setting up in this world, and then combined with just the ridiculous amount of art awesomeness that Capullo and inker Jonathan Glapion and colorist FCO Placencia put into this. I mean, this is just the world to completely get lost in. And then, you know, it ends on a bit of a dour note as we go to the Darklands and we find out, you know, we find the people plotting against the Adstrarians. And one of them is her former cat, who is evil.
What is the lesson here? Don't spay and neuter your pets, because they'll take that to the afterlife and form an army against you because you cut their testicles.
The cats
off.
Will.
Yeah,
exactly.
Dogs the cats. Are cool. The dogs are like, whatever it is you say, I'm fine with that.
Yep.
Dude.
This book is awesome.
Yeah, right?
I love this book. You're right. This is Miller continues his run of creating really interesting worlds to explore. He's had this string for the last couple of years. this is fun, and the characters are interesting, and it's the little details. I mean, it's not a revolutionary concept. It's even sort of biblical, but it's the little details he puts in that make it interesting, and the art is just, Capullo was able to shine on Batman, but here he really gets to go nuts because this isn't a quote-unquote real world, so you've got giant tree palaces and battle cat dogs and samurai warriors, and he gets to just go crazy in this book, and it's really, really good.
Yeah. I love it. And it's the kind of thing where it's like it's so vast and so wide in its scope that, yes, this main thrust is the main character trying to find her husband, but then you've got the battle between the good people in the Darklands, but then you get the sense that he can revisit this world and tell stories in it for time to come, and it's really compelling, and I like how it's taking the little connection between how you live your life now and then the ramifications in this afterlife in ways that are very clever, to be honest. The idea that everyone is this beefed up version of themselves, and there's some direct through line to how you behaved on Earth is just really creative and clever. I mean, Miller, he's a clever guy.
Do you think her dad plays in a metal band in Industria?
With a mustache like that, I hope so.
Yeah.
Bass.
Josh isn't talking, so I assume he doesn't enjoy this book as much.
I haven't had a chance to, because you guys won't shut up.
like Elvis.
Just like Elvis.
And I really have to go ahead. Like, we don't know what this is either.
Yeah.
I just don't want people to feel left out. We all feel left out.
Right before the show started, Ron made it.
Don't explain it.
I'm just saying it just came up right before the show, and I don't know what's happening. Yeah.
Okay. I like this issue more than I like the last one. I think it's really interesting. I have thoughts about it. They're not necessarily criticisms. I know we say this about a lot of his books. It doesn't feel like Mark Miller at all.
Right.
At all. It almost feels like there's almost elements of like Saga in this.
Yep.
And like you've taken this alternate sort of world and then made it actually very familiar.
A little Kurt Busiek, too.
Yeah, I think it's...
A little Kurt Busiek, a little... I mean, Mark I'll Wade. Go... I mean, because of the... A little Wade, a little Ringo DeZago.
Yeah.
Tell us.
Well, which brings me to another... I don't know that Greg Capullo is the right choice for this.
Whoa.
Interesting.
Whoa.
Wow. Controversy.
I think his storytelling's very good. His, all his care. I don't really like the design of everything. It makes me kind of not believe it. Like I was reading this thinking, what an awful afterlife. I don't want to be like, you died. You did a great job in life. Now you have to lead an army with a sword.
Well, like, you don't have to. Just she does.
You don't have to.
Other people just run in shops and stuff.
Yeah, it looks like the friend that's from Philadelphia is just like, oh hey, I'm just here. So.
No, I know, and it's weird that like, there's going to be some explanation, but it's weird that like. Everyone she knows is the bigwig now for some reason. It's just this lady.
This is her family. She's like being born into a royal family.
This is all happening in her head during her stroke or whatever. This is like the last episode of
St. Elsewhere.
Oh, so you think this is the moment before she dies? You think this is a dream?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, but like it's weird. It's really weird. So I think that's the part of me that I can't sort of get a grasp on. And I'm going to say this about a book we're talking about later, but this really is. It's funny. It's one of those, this is what you're supposed to do with a comic book.
Right.
In terms of like, just make it wacky and out there. And it's funny because so many of Miller's other properties do lend themselves very well to a high concept pitch in a movie or whatever. This would be a weird movie. Like, I don't know that this would be an easy one to sell.
I don't know. I could.
I mean, it's a fantasy.
I know you could, but it's not as straightforward as the others. And it there's a leap of imagination. Like, it's just a little odd. Yeah. It's a little wacky.
I mean, and Miller's a little wacky, but it definitely has more echoes of 80s-esque kind of fantasy, never-ending story kind of, although that's more children's-y, but yeah, but that idea of it.
So it's really interesting. It's compelling. I'm not going to not read it. Like, I'm curious where it goes. What is this? 4 issues, 6 issues, something like that?
Who knows? Yeah, his normal's like 5, yeah.
And listen, under no circumstances would it be a wise economic move to not have Greg Capullo on this book. But for me, I kept thinking if it was somebody else. I mean, even if you had done this with Eminent instead of that other book, I think it would be
interesting. I think you might be right. It might not make a good movie, but it probably would make a great HBO series.
Something like that, yeah.
Or an AMC series.
That's a real stretch to make about a comic book property.
Oh, this is 6 issues. I know. I'm looking it up. 6 issues.
Yeah,
it's 6. Yeah.
So, like, I like it. I think all the things that you said were true. I don't know that I've quite connected to it. I did think that. this issue seemed very different than the last one, because it was like, here we are. And I've been feeling like that a lot lately. The first issue is like this one thing. It doesn't tell you anything. And the second one goes, okay, here's how it actually is. I feel like that's
because I feel like a lot of these high-level, high-end concepts are requiring more than what 20 to 22 pages can allow for. That said, if we can segue to the next book on the rundown, I would give James Robinson credit for utilizing a first issue near flawlessly in terms of a storytelling point of pulling you in and then leaving you at a point of wanting to read the next issue. And that was with Grand Passion, number one, a new book that came out from Dynamite, as James Robinson, along with artist Tom Feister. Did either of you guys read this or?
No.
No.
Okay. Well, what grabbed me about this was a new romance series from James Robinson.
Is it like, an actual romance comic, or is it like?
I was all ready for fucking Millie the Model, and like I wanted a romance, right? I wanted young romance.
Is there
romance,
a demon?
Right?
Is there some sort of fantasy demon element? There's a superhero.
But basically, what happens is that at first, I wish I could plot the emotional story arc of me reading this issue because
did
I start
you cry
off
on this one too.
No, I didn't cry. But I started off really high because I was like, wow, James Robinson's doing a romance comic. Awesome. Because, like, he's a romantic dude. And so I start reading it, and it starts telling the story of this couple who are, you know, classic Bonnie and Clyde, you know, true romance trope. You know, which coming off of last week, Josh, after reading Violent Love, I was like, oh, come on. You know, like, you've got, you know, these characters of Steve and Mabel who are making a name for themselves by going from city to city in the Midwest, dressing up in different disguises and robbing banks. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to read a fucking romance about a couple that robs banks, right? But then at the same time, there's a parallel story of a new sheriff in this town in Illinois or Indiana or whatever. And I forget his name. His name is Mac or something like that. I don't know. So, and what happens is that it's parallel telling their story of this couple that's doing the robberies and this cop who is McNamara. That's the guy's name. That's his last name. And then at the end of the book, their paths converge as this new cop and his partner are at lunch. And at the same time, the couple pulls into town to rob a bank. And so the two sheriffs come out, they hear gunshots, they go out of the bank, and they see the two robbers. And the woman of the bank robbing couple and the cop make eye contact, and it's love at first sight. And then, of course, the bank robbery partner gets shot, and now she's on the run. But turns out McNamara is the one who shot her partner, and that even though she's clearly in love with the guy, there's a code, and now she's got to kill him because he killed her partner, and that's how it ends, and that's where the story goes. And by the end of the book, I was like, oh, I am in on this because this is great. It was contained. It set it up. It introduced you to the characters and gave you the conflict, or gave you where the thrust of the story right by the last issue and right by the last last page. And with the last page, I can't wait for the next issue, which is how it's done. You guys should check this out. I was hoping you seeing it on the rundown would make.
I did, but I didn't have time for that.
Yeah. Okay. That said, Tom Feister.
What do I know him from?
I don't know. Look it up while I'm talking. But I don't know if he's an artist on James Robinson's level, if that makes sense.
Well, that's the Dynamite problem. And that's why I often end up not reading their books, is because...
But I gave it a chance because I liked the mix of James Robinson doing romance would be great. There's a couple of very complicated pages in here with lots of panels. And I give him credit for trying, but I just wonder if, you know, I wonder how this book could have been better with somebody with more experience, you know. Not to say Tom Feister's bad. I mean, there are a couple panels, a couple pages.
He's older than us.
I don't know if it's an experience thing. I think it's just sort of a Dynamite style thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Since he worked on Ex Machina.
Did he? Or
as an inker?
I think so, yeah.
Because it was funny you say that because I was like, you know, I could see Tony Harris drawing this, but.
He had to. Been an inker. Yeah, he's listed as an inker. If you go to his comic DB page, he was an inker in Ex Machina.
Yeah, that's why. I knew the name quite well.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was compelling and really interesting, and I like the idea of James Robinson doing romance. I wish it was a little more nice romance instead of violence related, but yeah, it was interesting.
Is this first segment going to be the segment where everybody talks solo about their books that nobody else read?
It might be
here, so but we can listen to Ron for.
Well, can we? Let's mix it up. Let's hear from Josh then next. Let's swap it.
Okay, so you guys know that I was a big fan of the Lucifer comic book series back in the day,
and the TV show, right?
I've never watched the television.
I believe you called that book your favorite book at the time when it was out.
Probably. That sounds about right. It was one of those long ones that you get into it, you know, like a novel that you're reading over 5 years or something.
Or like Elvis.
Just like Elvis.
What I like is that I introduced it and you guys are running away with it. Oh, that's what I like.
That's how it usually goes.
It's very difficult to not say it after all of the sentences. Like Elvis would have. He'd go, oh, just like me, man.
You know, like Elvis.
Yeah.
Right. Lucifer.
Lucifer.
Right. So when they brought it back at, is it even Vertigo? When they brought it back, I was notably cynical because I don't know who Holly Black is. I know who Lee Garbett is, and I know that he likes Jaws, so I like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I tried the first one. I was like, that was actually pretty good. And then as I'm going through it, kind of feels like old times.
You've mentioned before how you've enjoyed.
Yeah, and now I'm at the point where the reason I'm bringing it up, this is issue 12. I was like, oh, this has been around a year. Now when it shows up, I get excited. I'm like, oh, awesome. It's a Lucifer week. Because it really does have that feel and reverence, you know, sort of. There's, I don't know how to explain it, but a lot of times when there's a really great property and then somebody comes along 10 years later because they're going to do their take on it, it doesn't work. Because I tend to think of Lucifer as a thing that really I relate to Mike Carey and how he wrote it and whatever. And this is like, it's reverent of that, but it 100% works. Like the characters have all advanced during that time, you know, and it all fits. The artwork completely fits sort of the aesthetic that book had, which was mostly Peter Gross and Ryan Kelly back in the first run. And you know, like it feels like it's doing its own thing, but it's absolutely cognizant of what Mike Carey did and what that tone is and what it should be. And you know, like they went back home again, and it works really well. So yeah, this is one of the books that I'm really like, wow, this is great. So obviously, I think it'll get canceled anytime now. But if the TV show doesn't, we should be good to go. Really good. They're doing the same thing where it would be so easy to take this Lucifer character and go, oh, he's evil. But that's not what it is. They ride this line about what it is as opposed in opposition of the light or the, you know, the Silver City or, you know, heaven, as they call it in the books.
He can't be evil if he's fighting crime on TV.
Again, I'm not
dot, 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 like that. Elvis.
Right. Right. I don't even know what to do with that. I don't know. It was a bad show they did this week. They kept saying this thing that I guess was funny to them. But I don't know if I'm going to keep listening if this is the kind of crap that we're going to expect.
Slam!
Slam. So this is from Boom Studios, specifically their Boombox imprint, which I just have to say, just put it out. Just put it out under Boom. All the imprints are just nonsense, in my sense. I don't know. But this is a book written by Pamela Ribbon with art by Veronica Fish. And this is about roller derby. And I great little indie comic that, you know, and when I was working at Image, you know, we had a lot of conversations and I talked a lot about kind of comics that are about specific interests, you know, whether like how I would love to see like a comic about baseball or this idea of the people who are in this world of the subcommunity or, you know, kind of subculture of a sport or a hobby or something like that, and the right and wrong way to do it. There's the very clinical kind of wrong way of doing it where you explain what it is in the comic, which is no fun, but the right way to do it is to, you know, kind of tell stories of people within the context of this is what we do. And Pamela Ribbon came up with a great, you know, like you really feel as if you are on the roller derby team after reading this. It was just a lot of fun. If you're, you know, I imagine it's perfect for fans of roller derby, but even if you have any sense of awareness of what roller derby is, you know, women on roller skates bashing into each other. And I know it's much more than that. I dated a roller derbyist.
Is that their preferred nomenclature?
I don't know, but
roller derbyist,
roller derby girl. But it was, this tells the story of two girls who join the roller derby team. You see them get kind of recruited. They're coming from two different kind of places in the world, and they meet, you know, they meet each other. They become friends. They go through the whole kind of training, and then it ends with them getting drafted onto two different teams and how they're gonna deal with that. But it was just a fun indie book. I mean, as what these Boombox books are, you know, kind of a, you know, this reminds me of the books that were out in the mid 2000s or so that were like a burgeoning indie scene that is kind of nearly gone now. But it's nice to see that kind of still kicking around. And this was fun. This is just it was just a fun, very, very specific topic, but still entertaining. So I enjoy it.
I want to go ahead and make sure the audience recognizes that Ron, when it was his pick, really went and did his due diligence here.
I did.
Tried some new things. He went out there.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah,
I'm not being like, that's what happens. Like, sometimes you're like, I can't talk about these other books again.
Well, that's why it's funny, because
I wouldn't have read this one, because I would have been like, I don't want to read it.
Well, Josh, you didn't live in San Francisco, so of course you wouldn't read this book.
That's true. Yeah, that's a good point. I did. Well, it's funny. Ironically, I did.
It's not like I'm looking for books about moose hunting.
Right. Ironically, the roller derby girl I dated was in Connecticut, so that wasn't even in San Francisco. But I have seen more roller derby in San Francisco than on the East Coast.
Yeah. It's pretty hard to not see roller derby in San Francisco. I've only been there a lot, and I feel a little, and I feel like, oh, there's roller derby. It was like when you couldn't not see people playing Pokemon for like that 6 weeks when that was a thing.
Yeah. Well, what's funny is that actually, like, and you're right. Like, I mean, it's funny because if you're looking at the rundown of this week, you know, we're not talking about any Marvel or DC in this top top half of the show.
Lucifer.
Right. Well, yeah, but Lucifer's I'm like DC. Superhero.
Okay. Fine. You know. Let's not. Come on.
That's fair. No, it's fair. I'll allow it. But
he also just called this Boom book an indie book.
It is an indie book.
Oh, it's a Boom book.
Yeah.
It's
Boom.
Independent.
Well, come on. They have a CEO.
So anyone can declare themselves CEO.
But then there's CEOs and there's CEOs.
Anyway, what grabbed me about this as I'm looking for a book
they
to
have an
you know
on Wilshire Boulevard.
As I'm looking for a book, you know, as I'm doing my due diligence for the pick of the week, it was the cover that got me. The cover was, you know, pink and green and yellow, very like the cover. You can't really tell it's about roller derby from the cover, but it just seemed very.
Opened it and were like, crap, this is about roller. Fine, I'm already reading it. Whatever. I was expecting more pink and green. That's what I want out of my comic book. God damn it. You know, this isn't bad.
Anyway, so check it out. It's worth a look. I like seeing different things in the market. So there you go.
Briggs Land number 4. And am I the only one reading this?
No, I'm still reading it. I'm fascinated by it.
Josh, why are you reading this?
There's too many fucking books.
But this is like right up your alley. This is Brian Wood doing political... relevant to the now culture stories.
I totally don't want to read that now.
I'm just going to say, Connor, you might want to word it differently.
Josh, in 10 years, you can revisit this book and you'll enjoy it quite a bit.
That's fine.
Josh, it's a very Vertigo-esque book by Brian Wood that I think you would enjoy.
I'm making a gesture with my hand and mouth right now.
It's.
I'm not going to tell you what it is, but I think you could see Elvis doing it.
It's It's about a white supremacist clan in upstate New York.
I don't want to read it.
You really do. It's
Klan with a C. Klan with a C.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes a difference.
And last issue, there was a big dramatic event that happened. A shootout. People died. People were exposed. And because the main thrust of the story is that the patriarch of the family is in prison now, and his wife is struggling to take over the family. And in this issue, it was kind of a small issue in which we just see them going about their daily lives. You see them, the wife putting up fence posts, but mostly you see the oldest son deciding he's going to buy out his partner. So he's the bookkeeper of the family. He's been laundering money through the local hardware store, Hill's Son Home Value. And he decided, I'm just going to buy out my partner and take over the store. And the guy doesn't want to sell. And there's a bit of a negotiation process that happens. And it sounds boring, but it's not. Because
so these two guys fax back and forth, right?
There's a dead animal, there's some guns, there's all kinds of things that happen. Get the process closed. But I love this book. I don't know how long it's going. I thought I read it was only going to be 6 issues. That doesn't seem possible, considering this is the 4th issue. But
well, this is the first issue of the second arc,
right? So I don't see how that could possibly be only 6 issues. But I hope this is an ongoing because I know that they've already optioned this to AMC as a series, and it'll make it a fantastic series if they actually make it. This is slowly becoming one of my favorite books out right now. It touches that Brian Wood thing that's been missing for a while. He's done great work with The Black Road and some more historical-based stuff lately, but this feels like that DMZ Brian Wood, that you know the Channel Zero Brian Wood, the one that he's commenting on Society Now. And
yep.
Not many people do it better than him in terms of the political angle. Yeah, I don't mean politics like politicians, but I mean sort of the politics of people.
No, like an uncomfortable topic.
Yes.
You know, like I think, you know, taking and especially having this book isn't about other people reacting to this family. It's about this family.
Yeah.
And there's little to nothing that I can relate to with these people, but I definitely find it intriguing and fascinating. And the artist, Mac Chater, I've never heard of, whatever. Really, really good. Yeah. I mean, like and looks like this
Michael Lark a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. And this really
That's all right. Yeah.
This really does feel a lot like a mid-2000s Vertigo book.
It does. That was an old iFanboy joke. But yes.
Yeah.
Really old.
It does feel like that. My favorite panel run was the brother's at the gym and he's got a giant white power tattoo on his back. And there's one panel with him walking through the locker room in a towel. And you see the other people in the locker room reacting to his tattoo. And it's just sort of a throwaway panel. This book's fantastic. Really, really good.
Yeah.
Some Dark Horse. If you're not reading it and you liked Brian Wood's other stuff, check it out for sure.
Yeah, no, it's really intriguing. It's very I like it. So hopefully it sticks around.
You should also check out Geek Fuel.
Absolutely.
Geek Fuel ships out a mystery box for geeks and gamers every single month. And inside that box, you get at least $50 worth of value. It only costs you $15 shipping and handling. Every box has an exclusive t-shirt, a full downloadable game, for a total of 527 geeky items. Special listeners at iFanboy get a bonus variant of Suicide Squad number 1. It's a black and white variant, and there's going to be a picture of it on the website. You can check it out there. So anyone who goes to geekfuel.com/iFanboy and signs up, you'll be entered to win the Suicide Squad variant cover. That's exciting.
It's cool stuff. Yeah. Who doesn't like getting cool stuff in the mail? I do. So Geek Fuel is there are good people doing putting some cool stuff in there for you. So, yeah.
You know, like Elvis.
All right. So thank you, GeekFuel.com, for sponsoring this episode. Moonshine number 2, the Prohibition era werewolf comedy.
Keep
by
going.
By Brian Azzarello and Eduardo Risso. are either of you guys sticking with it?
I love this.
This is great. Like I don't care. I don't care that there's a werewolf. I do not care.
Yeah.
This was better than the first issue, which didn't go far enough to tell me what I was reading.
Yeah.
See, I don't agree with that. I don't agree with what you said about Reborn either. What in this issue tells you what you didn't get in the first issue? It's exactly the same.
Connor, I don't give a good goddamn what you agree with. I just feel like I didn't have an idea about what the book was at the end of the first issue of either of those.
It's the same as this book. It's a guy trying to get this book.
I know, I just said that.
A werewolf.
Yeah, I get it.
This gives you no new information. I'm just trying to figure out what you think that this book gave you that the other issue didn't give you.
Not information. It's what the book is going to read like, what it's going to feel like, what kind of story it is. Not necessarily what the plot is.
I don't know. But listen, you're a special flower. You get to have your own feelings.
I read it. I liked it better than the first issue. I don't like werewolves at all, though.
I mean, it's funny I'm reading this book, and like, yes, there's a werewolf in it, but it doesn't feel like there's a werewolf in it.
Really? Because I saw a werewolf.
Eat that guy's head.
Is maybe the one thing that Eduardo Risso's not that good at drawing.
Wow.
Like, it wasn't horrible, but compared to everything else he does, I was like, that's kind of a whack-ass werewolf.
Right.
It's not a great werewolf.
I think this is like vintage Azzarello and Risso.
Yeah.
I thought it looked fantastic. I love the layouts. That's really interesting.
Other than
panel
that,
compositions.
Yeah.
And the main character's fun.
I mean, it's funny because like I like the story. I mean, and part of it is, I think part of it is tapping into my missing Boardwalk Empire.
There is definitely some of that there,
which is valid. But the thing is that like honestly, I mean, Azzarello is great, and I'm not saying I advocate in this, but like I could just not read it and look at the Risso art and be completely satisfied because it's just like Eduardo Risso is just so damn good.
And that there's my trepidation though, because for me, Azzarello, not unlike a Jonathan Hickman, like. Loses me every time.
Yeah.
Every time. And it's not that it's bad. It's just that I lose interest.
Right.
Which it's not objectively bad. It subjectively ends up not being my thing. So I'm always like, all right, I'm going to wade into this. And then in 4 months, I'm going to go, I don't want to keep reading this.
Yeah. Ron, if Boardwalk Empire had a werewolf in it, it might still be on the air.
That's a very good point. Or time travel now.
You know, can we say for sure there wasn't a werewolf in Boardwalk Empire?
No. There's some hairy men on that show.
Exactly.
So. All right. Well,
whenever that guy shows up in anything.
Well, enough of the
books.
Enough of these indie books. Let's get back to the mainstream. They're back on the Thanos train. Thanos number one, Jeff Lemire, Mike Diodato, the big release for Marvel this week. One of the things from Hickman's run, from Hickman's run on Avengers, one of the things I liked was those new characters that he introduced around Thanos, including Corvus Glaive. And then this issue, they kill him. So I was like, well, that's a character I liked. They didn't have to kill him.
Have you seen him since?
No.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, probably. But, so basically Thanos is back, and he's – actually, you know what this reminded me a lot of? And maybe just because of – we seem to, bathe ourselves in Boardwalk Empire and Goodfellas and things like that. But this reminded me a lot of when the boss gets out of jail and wants his territory back.
Like Peach Romana?
In any story, like a mob boss. Oh, you know what I mean? In any story. Like, basically, so Thanos has been gone.
Like Billy Bats?
Like Billy Bats. And Billy Bats, just he did his time, and he just wants what's coming to him.
He just wants what's right.
What's right is what's right.
Just do what's right.
Thanos has been captured. He's now back into the wild because of the events that are going on in Civil War. And he shows up on an old planet that was his, that Corvus Glaive is ruling. And he kills Corvus Glaive and takes it over. And he's slowly building up his power empire. So that's the gist of this. It was all right.
It's like Mike Diodato, Frank Martin, and Clayton Cowles. That's like, oh, that's the Marvel, like, A-minus team.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
Well, no, like, they'll put him on a big book, but, like, nobody's getting excited about it.
Yeah.
Like, it's good. It's a fun, but it's not like boutique stuff. It's like, these are the guys who will get it done at a very high level, but it's not Frank Quitely.
Right.
If that makes sense.
God, could you imagine Quitely on this book? Oh, that'd be amazing.
Can imagine Quitely on any book.
Any book. What about on the werewolf book? He'd be great. He'd be great.
He's so mad.
He would draw a great werewolf. It would take him 4 years for all the hair.
Yeah, that'd be great. Oh, man.
Jessica Jones number two. I am very conflicted about this book.
Okay, so did you not like this issue?
No.
Because
I'm conflicted, Ron. I have feelings on both sides of the coin. On the one hand, I did like the issue. On the other hand, I don't like what they're doing to Jessica and Luke. But on the third hand, I guess it feels appropriate because at least in this world, Jessica always fucks everything up.
Right.
But it also doesn't really jibe with what they're doing in the other Marvel books.
That was my big complaint about it when on issue one. But I liked issue two a lot more, specifically the conversation between Jessica and Luke in the beginning, which then has Luke smashing the car door into the sidewalk, saying, "Everyone told me," like that. I was like, "Oh wow, that shit got real."
It feels like this is appropriate for the Alias book that they wrote, but not for the 10 years of comics that came after.
Right, that was my problem with the first issue.
And so this is my problem with the second issue.
That's valid. I think that's valid, but also, the guy who created her.
I get it. And he wrote all those comics, those 10 years of comics, so I don't know what to think. I liked her fighting the Spot. That was funny.
Yeah, I love the Spot, period. It's a great character. Might be one of Mark Waid's best.
I didn't read it.
Okay.
But now that I'm thinking about it, because I remember being not sure about the other one, but now that I'm thinking about it, I kind of want to read it again, but I know that I'm going to come out of it in exactly the same way.
Well, I'd be curious to see what your take on it is, Josh, because I feel as if when it's good, you're more forgiving of the things that me and Connor tend to nitpick on.
Which is what I think would happen when we talked about it last time.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like, if you just look at it for what it is. But, you're right. Like, I remember being mad that, I don't know, they got a kid and she's hitting the daughter. And I was just like, no, you don't do that.
Right, that's what, but it just doesn't make sense reason. To me. Yeah.
Well, have they not explained it yet, or did they explain it was stupid?
Hasn't explained no. it yet.
And she's been in jail? Like, what is that? Like, yeah, it's very much the throw you into a story that you don't know what's going on.
Which is fine, I just don't like what's happening. It just doesn't, I don't have a problem with
that. Well, the question really is, do you still trust Bendis in that instance? Because there's people who you trust to do that, and we definitely used to, but I don't know if we still do.
Right.
So, Ron, in that panel where we see... I really like the page where she's going back to the office and she's imagining all the stuff that could be behind her door. One of them is the cops, one of them is the Avengers, and the third panel is all the characters from the Netflix shows.
Yeah.
Is that Wolverine back there?
I think it is. Old Man Wolverine, Old Man Logan. What is he doing there?
I don't know. He doesn't have a Netflix show.
Yeah. I think it was that's supposed to be like it's the, you know, it's the authorities, then it's all the superheroes, then it's all like the street level underground ones.
Spider Woman too.
So I guess Old Man Logan's in there.
That's her buddy.
For some reason, I thought it could be Misty Knight instead of Spider Woman. Never mind, my whole theory's blown.
Oh, I thought it was Misty Knight instead of Wolverine. What?
Infamous Iron Man 2. Let's keep on this Bendis train. I liked this issue.
I liked it.
I liked it a lot.
Although I found myself reading it going, why is Ben Grimm being a jerk?
Yes, a little bit, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but because it's Doctor Doom.
But he didn't even knock over those vases.
Those knocking over those vases at the Latverian embassy was uncalled for, and not like he of all people should understand that the people of Latveria do not equal Doom.
He's really mad about something. You got to think this is a guy who's been frustrated for like 50 years, 55 years. Like he's had it. He's had it up to here. And now everything's changed on him. No, I'm not taking it anymore. I made a rock. I'm strong and I'm letting it out.
Right.
I liked it.
I don't know. It's just weird enough. Yeah, I liked it. It's good.
I liked it. Yeah. Josh, you hit the nail on the head. It's just weird enough. I like it.
Yeah, that's the extent of our really our astute reviews. I liked
it. Just weird enough, just like Elvis.
Good. That's
you know,
true.
You know, just like Elvis.
That's true.
So, Josh, I got to ask you, did you read any comics this week?
I did. I read a bunch.
Okay.
But I didn't have a bunch that I felt the need to like say a whole lot about.
We have
a list.
But there is one.
Yeah. I did read G.I. Joe Revolution number one.
Okay, and?
It's pretty weird. Did you guys both read it?
No.
No.
Really?
What is the premise? Oh. I think I'm done chasing the G.I. Joe dragon for a while. Like I tried to chase the original Marvel dragon, and then I tried to chase the Cobra dragon from that great series from 10 years ago. And I can't chase it.
This is the point where, this is written by Aubrey Sitterson, and you have to recognize where he's coming from, which is he sort of is to wrestling what we are to comics in that sense. Like he has that kind of like he loves the wrestling.
Okay,
sure.
And so he's going to have that aesthetic a little bit, if that helps with G.I. Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So this is in the aftermath of some sort of G.I. Joe versus Transformers thing. Which for me, big red flag.
Right.
But I thought, no, I'm going to fight through this. And like, so there's like a small team left. There is Rock and Roll, Roadblock, Lady J, some other red shirt Joes. But there's a thing going on where there's like, I'm not exactly sure, but some sort of Transformer related Cylon kind of thing. So they're taking over some of the Joes. And so none of this little band of Joes knows who's real and who's not. And it ends with, and it makes Rock and Roll go crazy, basically. And he shoots the hell out of somebody who is a Joe that you know and kills him and finds out he was not a robot plant. It's just that the other Joe thought that Rock and Roll was too. So both of their paranoia and Rock and Roll came out on top as having killed him. And then he was like, he wasn't even a robot. He was very mad.
So this was a named Joe. This was a Joe I might have in a box somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
It was a baby.
No, Quick Kick was in it, though.
Quick Kick was in it. Interesting. Was it Jinx?
Yeah, Quick Kick was in it.
Was it Jinx?
No.
Was
this
it Doc?
This is more roots level.
Was it
Jinx?
Was it Grunt?
Snake Eyes? Did he kill Snake Eyes?
No, nope, Snake Eyes wasn't in
Steeler?
It.
Steeler?
No? Do you want me to just tell you?
Stalker. Because... No, I want to keep naming just randomly.
Okay.
Naming
I think it's second wave. I don't think it's first wave.
Flint?
So on the cover...
It's Flint, isn't it?
Oh, my God. It's Flint.
Is it Flint?
Is it Flint?
It's not Flint. Scarlet
is not charged
with
It's not Cutter, is it?
No. But while Bill's in this issue...
Wait a minute.
Shipwreck this issue?
Oh, I was going to say Shipwreck. Is it Elvis?
It's just like Elvis.
Is it Sergeant Slaughter?
Is it Big Lob?
Is it Falcon?
I just figured out what the game is. I'm not sure what era.
Is it Rambo?
I'm going to go ahead and just tell you now.
Wait. Hold on.
You're going to get it.
Is it barbecue?
Mentioned.
Is it Soundwave? Oh, that's a Transformer. Hold on.
It's not Laserbeak either.
Oh, wait. Is it, shoot. Who's the Indian?
No.
Spirit.
Spirit.
Is it Spirit?
It's not. It's a Joe. It's a Roots Joe.
Spears
are
Roots Joe. Spears are Roots Joe.
Is it barbecue?
We did ask that already.
Wait, is it an animated series like Roots?
I don't remember. It's like middle
sci-fi?
No, I think you're too late there. No, sci-fi was early.
No, sci-fi was late.
So I thought it was Mainframe, but then I just looked again. It's not Mainframe. But it's a character who I would get mixed up with Mainframe.
Is it Dr. Mindbender?
Oh, was it Short Fuse?
That, again,
Tunnel Rat.
That's from another movie.
What about Crankcase?
No, you're just looking at a list now. I can tell.
I'm not. Dial tone.
I love Dial Tone's backpack, by the way.
Dial Tone is great. I love Dial Tone.
It's not Dial Tone.
Who was it?
It's Grand Slam. Rock and Roll killed Grand Slam.
I don't even know who Grand Slam is.
He's just sort of a mid-level, but he's a real, like, he wasn't just somebody who's dreamed up for the cartoon.
Oh, I remember this dude.
Yeah.
Oh. He's the one with the jetpack.
Is that a jetpack? I don't know. He looks all lasery. That's the
best
thing.
He's got a jetpack.
Oh, he's been around since 82. He's an old school. He's original.
He's old school. He's first wave.
Yeah. So basically, if you can not have to have that other kind, you know, that kind that was like the G.I. Joe Cobra kind of thing, and he's not trying to do, it's almost like a cartoon, but with killing.
Is this canon?
I mean,
well, is it, what isn't canon these days?
Yeah, Connor? At this point, they've rebooted enough. I don't know, but it is for what it is now.
You know, what do you think? What do you think the Hasbro G.I. Joe canon looks like these days? That binder is just like.
I have a better question for you. What percentage of the listenership dropped off during that segment? 45.
Oh, another character. I think another character. Oh, one of the characters. I don't want to give it away, but one of the characters is revealed to actually have been a plant, and they kill him. So we don't know where the real version of that character is.
Grand Slam, he's got a double first name. He's James Barney.
Yeah, that'll happen.
From Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, and he has the rank of E5.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, he did. Nice. I'm sorry, he's dead.
I enjoyed it. At first I was like, oh, I don't think I'm going to like this, and then because I wanted to. Then by the end, I was like, this is just wacky. I'm having fun with it. It's cool.
Good, as it should be.
Yep.
All right, so those are the comics we enjoyed this week. But every week we ask the iFanboy patrons, the loyal supporters of iFanboy, to vote and pick a book they want us to talk about. And this week's pick from the patrons was Ether number one, written by Matt Kent with art by David Rubin, who did everything.
This was the far and away pick. This was like double the closest closest competitor.
So first issue of a new series from Dark Horse. Matt Kent is known to be a little out there, and this continues that trend, I thought.
I was about halfway through this, and I realized I don't think I've ever actually liked a Matt Kent book.
I realized that when I saw his name on the front. I like
the early stuff.
I like his...
Like Elvis? What?
Well, of course, you'd
you know,
say
you
that.
Know, like, you know, like Elvis.
That's not wrong, though. Seriously. Son? I mean...
You like Matt Kent's Sun Sessions?
I don't... You're not kidding. Blue Moon of Kentucky, keep on shining.
There's a lot of imagination here. I like a lot of the page layouts. You know, I always like a little focus on what the guy's carrying. You know, the little... those panels. But I didn't really... connect with this so much. I didn't dislike it, but at the end of it,
I think I'm right with you. I actually thought it was really good. I thought, like, there's a whole lot going on here, and I was talking earlier about, like, this is what comic books are for. I thought this is awesome for a comic book, that this is, like, great for it. I thought it was really well done. Yeah. Don't love the coloring so much, but other than that, I liked that, like, the characters were completely fleshed out, and they were interesting and unique and all sorts of things, and it's not for me.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is that it like completely just drops you into this world with the assumption that you know who this character is. And
so I don't.
They refer to things that happened in the past a lot to make you feel like you
know
something.
I think that's been a criticism that's been made in the show a lot, but I don't think that's a problem.
Oh, I didn't think it was bad.
I don't think it's a problem either. No, I like that they did that. Okay. I don't know. I like this. I mean, it was weird. It was out there. I always fall back whenever I want to describe it as like Peter Milligan-y, but this is Peter Milligan-y, I thought. And you know, I like that the David Rubin does the whole package of the art and all that sort of stuff. So I enjoyed it. I don't know if I have any desire to continue reading it.
Yes, I think I agree with how Josh categorized it, in that I thought it was good. Like the craft level was great. The imagination was interesting. Everything about it was, I read it and I was interested in it, but by the end of it, I was like, I don't really need to read more.
Yeah, so. No, it's not even I'm not even putting a qualification on. Like, it was genuinely good. It was really well done. And if this is your kind of thing, you're going to be super happy. But it's not my kind of thing, basically.
All right. So that said, ratings.
Ratings.
4.
Connor gives it a 4.
I would go with that.
I'm going to go with that 4. As well.
Yep.
Connor, are you sticking with it?
No.
Josh.
No.
Me, no.
Wow. Have we ever had that complete convergence on all of our ratings?
I don't know. I think DC Rebirth Cyborg number one we all agreed on. No, I have no idea. All right, so thank you to the patrons for voting, and we want to thank all of our patrons for supporting iFanboy. Every week we pick out a handful of patrons and we bestow them, the worthy, the few, a superpower. Whether it's useless or pointless, it's up to you to decide. So this week we've got another handful, and Connor, you're going to lead us off.
We want to thank Ryan Brown, and Ryan Brown's power could be financially lucrative for him. Oh. You know how like the Taskmaster can watch anybody fight and he can immediately copy their fighting style perfectly?
Okay.
Ryan Brown can copy anyone's dance moves.
Wow. All right.
So
that's useful.
It's very useful. He can have a very nice career, but it's just doesn't do much in a fight against Magneto.
Unless you're at one of those weddings where there's just nobody can dance.
Right.
Right.
So can he store them?
Yeah, does he retain them?
Yeah, he retains them.
Okay. That's cool. So he's the life of the party at the wedding.
Totally. It's just that when Magneto attacks the mansion, he's not much help. Right. He can dance them.
I was thinking that he wouldn't be able to get jobs as a choreographer because he's not original.
That's true. He can't come up with a dance move. He can just do it.
No, but then he's got a library of, once he's amassed enough dance moves, he can then do choreography using the dance moves he knows.
Well, he's not blazing any trail.
That's
no, he's Michael Kamen at that point. Nobody's going to hire him
if he's creative enough. Some people can do the thing. They can't come up with the thing.
Right. Yeah. I feel like he's more like a dancer for hire kind of guy. Like, you always want to hire that guy for your music video.
He's the guy who comes into the small town with a duster on and says he's the dancer for hire.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. We also want to thank Patrick Molman for supporting iFanboy. And Patrick has the amazing ability to travel through time. All he has to do is think about what time period, where he wants to go, and he just goes right there. But he can only go for 3 minutes at a time.
And then he comes back?
It's just enough time to not be able to do anything.
That's a historical treasure.
That's a long time, 3 minutes.
Yeah. 3 minutes, you realize. I mean, he's got a little stopwatch, and it's kind of like About Time, that movie, where he thinks about it, and he blinks, and he goes back, but then the timer's going, and as 3 minutes to the second, he's back in the
present. I'm going to tell you something. I think you just gave away a premise. that's almost not shitty enough.
3 minutes is too long. He could travel back to Ford's Theater and take a booth in 3 minutes, no problem. And could he? No,
but I didn't say that he can specify where he goes. So like he goes back to 1865, he might pop up in Baltimore.
He said he thinks about it.
He said he thinks about where he's going.
So right, geographically, he's got no control over it. How does he not end up in the middle of the ocean?
Well, that's a good point.
Odds are he would end up in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah.
So he's got to tread his water for 3 minutes, is what you're saying.
He can't die
until the sharks come.
All right, so that's Patrick and his limited time travel.
Matt, he's got the sense of smell of a dog.
So he's just got a really good sense of smell?
Yeah, he's got his brain is way more to smell than humans. It's just like a dog. And he freaks out all the time.
All right.
How do you guys not smell that?
Fair.
Interesting.
I think it would be a problem. He's not living in New York City, I can tell you that much.
Yeah.
Also, do dogs just get used to the smell when they live in cities then?
Mine didn't.
That's a good question. I don't know.
Always distracted by something. The fall is a problem too. Because it's all the leaves and there's shit under them. Literally shit.
Okay, last power.
So John O'Neill, sort of similar to Josh's in the animal vein. John O'Neill can talk to birds.
In bird speak or in English?
He just understands them, they understand him. The problem is...
A Wookiee and Han?
Yeah, but the thing is, he can't control them. He can just talk to them.
No, I understand that. Yeah, no, but he's not there he's not there singing. He's talking like we do, but the birds understand him.
Right, exactly, like Star Wars. But
But he's like, birds are idiots.
Or he's like, man, those birds, they know where it's at.
But it's not like he can make him go spy for him any more than you can make a human being go spy for
him. Well, if he could talk a bird into doing it, if he cultivates a relationship, and yeah.
Maybe after a while, he's best friends with, say, a parakeet. He can get the parakeet to do something. But
he who controls the seed. I'm saying.
All right. So thank you, Ryan, Patrick, Matt, and John for supporting iFanboy. And if you want to get on the action, if you want to vote for a book for us to talk about on the show, or if you want a dumb superpower, go to patreon.com/iFanboy. There you can sign up for as little as $1 a month to help support iFanboy directly. And we thank everyone for their support. But that is not the only way you can support iFanboy, Josh.
Heck no. You can, like Elvis, go over to iFanboy.com/support. And there you can go shop. You know, if Elvis had an Amazon account. It would be absurd.
Oh, God, it'd be amazing.
Wouldn't it be great to, like, walk in on Elvis when he's on Amazon and you want anything? And you're like, yeah, can you get me one of those? But if he did it, I would definitely use the link on our support page, because I think that would really work out for us. But we also think that, I don't know if you've noticed, but encroaching at the outer edges of your lives as the election drops behind us is the holiday season. So we would like to remind you and humbly request that when you're doing your Amazon shopping on the holidays, make sure to use the iFanboy link because that is a big deal for us, and we're very appreciative of it. And it doesn't cost you a damn thing. All you've got to do is not use one from one of those other podcasts. And I just want to say, who got here first? I mean, let's be honest. Still here.
I know that neither one of you guys watch TV, but for the advertisers about a week ago, it was Unleash the Hounds of advertising.
Was it?
They were like tapping at the edges in the beginning of November, and then last week it was just sort of like, now everything is Christmas.
Yeah. Okay, yep.
So for a little while, I would get it a little through Hulu, but I paid the $4 extra because now I didn't get those ads. Also, right there is a direct donation link to PayPal. If you just don't want to deal with any of those other things and you'd like to help the show out directly, then you can do that there too as well. And of course, we thank everybody who does that. It really does keep us going and we appreciate it.
Yes, indeed. All right. So speaking of Amazon shopping, leads to our first email. Connor, why don't you read it? Because I think it's right up your alley.
Fielding from Michigan writes and says, I'm not a patron, but I do order a lot of stuff with your Amazon link. I just got a house and often buy tools and light bulbs, the expensive ones, and stuff for my kids.
I bought a house with his link.
But so did I.
I would have noticed.
I like that he buys light bulbs, the expensive ones.
Nice.
LEDs, probably. I've been thinking about this since 2009. My father gave me an antique cabinet with a glass door. I use it to display both my comics and I'm reading and some of my complete runs that I like a lot. My question is this. How do you order your comics on a shelf compared to in a box? Because until I got this cabinet, I only had them in short boxes. Number one, first front to back, but on a shelf, it's reversed. Then how do you organize them? Alphabetical, chronological, autobiographical? Do you mix publishers? Thank you, and please hurry. I'm sitting on the floor surrounded by slippery stacks of comics and a 10-month-old that just found out he can crawl.
Run!
I've never even heard of anyone putting their comics on a shelf like that.
That's pretty cool. I mean, it sounds like he's got a pretty cool glass case.
No, I'm not saying it's not cool. I just wouldn't even know where to begin.
Are you standing him vertically? Because that's a problem with comics.
Yeah.
It sounds like he is.
I don't even know how that works.
Well, I feel like you got to ignore what it is, comics versus books, and just as trades or whatever, is that the organization on a shelf is different than in a box.
But how do you even know what you're looking at? You're just seeing a bunch of, you know, like backing boards and the sides of backing boards.
Right.
I tell you something. If they're not boarded, I'm stacking them. I'm not like on like flat,
right?
Okay. Not vertically, because comics are unwieldy.
Yeah.
Like okay. That. Yeah.
But also,
I wonder
what
if they're
talking about when he says organized comics.
I wonder if they're in like he might have those little like those things they sell at IKEA where you put magazines in, you right. know, like kind of keep them up, or he might have had them bound, you know, like the whole bookbinding process.
I've heard
of
people doing it with bound books on shelves, but it's not loose. Yeah. Let's just pretend we're in the situation. So we have to organize books on a shelf. How are you going to do it? Alphabetical, chronological, autobiographical.
My bookshelves when I had bookshelves when I had access to my books. I did them alphabetical by title, publishers all mixed in.
Yes, that's how I did my trades before I got rid of my shelves.
In order.
Yeah, exactly.
And there were always exceptions to that because some things just didn't fit that right way. So if something was like Avengers : whatever, or even if it didn't have that Avengers : then sometimes I'd put them with that anyway because that would be easier to find it.
Right, the character grouping or whatever. Yeah. I did separate hardcover. Well, no, I didn't. For a while I separated hardcovers and paperbacks, but then I mixed them all back in together.
So. I feel like that's a better system.
Yeah,
I did purely for space reasons because the the shelves that were too small for hardbacks. Yeah, I think you got to do straight alphabetical. It's just easier to find stuff that way.
Agreed.
Chronological. I can't even imagine the headache that is to if you got some old stuff.
By title, though, not by author.
Yeah. By title, yeah, not by author, not by author. Yeah, never by author.
Yeah, right. that would break up your runs. Okay, yeah, it doesn't work. Just working it out.
There you go.
All right. Our next email comes from John from Brooklyn, who asks, which comics help you get out of bed in the morning? I'm losing endurance, running on fumes on the Fury Road, chased by Gastown and Bullet Town. Ron said the Bart Allen death issue made him want to stand up and do something. I have no memory of that. What else? Mark Miller's been great since he quit the Sex Pistols and joined the Clash. Stop snarking about what he was against and start fighting for what he's for. What helps you fight for what you're for? And then Ron, any recent hardcore band recommendations? Everything I listen to is old or by bands I've liked for decades. Thinking apocalyptic thoughts for more hours than I want to count. Thanks for your hard work. Entertainment helps.
Is this email in code?
It got dark.
It got dark. It definitely
and
got
after
dark.
And after a little while, I was like, I don't know why he's talking like this. And then he said he was talking about hardcore, and I was like, oh, that's why he's talking about this. Like, that became incredibly clear, and I'm not making fun of you. Making fun of Ron Moore.
Yeah, no, exactly. But I think the important thing coming out of this is that we live in discouraging times, and he's right. Entertainment does help, and having escapism or having, you know, places to turn for that. I don't remember when Bart Allen died, but something that makes you, you know, feel charged is important. That said, I don't have anything to recommend right now. Comics wise.
Yeah, it's really like comics are totally not that thing for me right now.
Yeah.
It would have been at a time, I think. I mean, you're that Clash Sex Pistols metaphor, by the way.
Yep.
Bravo. It took me
right.
A minute.
Wow. Yeah, right? Think about it.
That was good.
Yep.
So that got me up. That right there would get me going a little bit.
So Josh is a good metaphor is what gets him out of bed.
Well, you know me. Do either of you think that that's not the case? He was going on that metaphor for 4 days. I mean, he was. It's good.
And the thing is, I desperately want a comic to get me excited about life again. You know what I mean? Like, I love that feeling, that charged feeling and all that sort of stuff. It just, it's, I mean, if anything, I mean, maybe read March because it's timely. And
do you think there are too many comics and that since we read so many, none of them really stand out in that way?
I think it's further than that. I think that we're guys who've been in the music industry for however long.
That too. I just can't think of anything comics wise that makes me go, yeah.
Well, and we have deconstructed them as objects for so long that it's difficult to be taken away by them. I mean, literally to the point of we've met most of the people who are making them.
Right.
And so even that's a factor. So like they don't necessarily have that same magic, you know, that I'm using music for that right now. That's what I do. Or like classic cinema. That's what I do for it. Like I'm too deep into comics to be able to look at it the same way, unfortunately.
Right. But I want to keep my mind open for when that can happen. You know, that's why I'm still reading them. That's why I'm still looking for them. You know, so.
But you know.
I also want to clarify. We're not saying we don't enjoy them or like comics. It's just harder to be inspired by them than it was 10 years ago.
It's but at the same time, like when Steve Dillon passed, I mean, like I keep thinking. I've never stopped thinking about Breacher at all. And like, if you've ever asked me, I'm as excited about it now as I was. I think I read it a year ago again. You know, that's still good. Like if I was to start reading that now. You know, everybody around would be like, please stop talking about it because it's that good. Like anytime it's funny because anytime recently somebody asked me about the Preacher TV show, they're like, you watch it? I'm like, no, but listen, and then they have to listen to me go on about it. That still gets me jazzed the way
so you do it, like play dates and stuff.
I get a little part of me just goes, all right, I'm going to tell you some things. You don't have to be interested, but I have to get through this.
All right. And
playdates, by the way.
Finally, John, to answer your question, check out Vanishing Life. I saw them the other night. They're really good. And I'm seeing Iron Sheik this weekend.
That's great.
And I can't help. What?
I listened to that Vanishing Life album. It was awesome.
It's good, right? Yeah.
Really good. Like, instantly, I was there because it sounded like the kind of music I wanted. But then there was also Walt's voice, which was, oddly enough, it was sort of antithetical to it because I associate his voice with that later stuff that is a little less.
Yeah, Quicksand Arrival.
No, like his solo stuff that was like.
Oh, I see, like the more kinksy stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so like it was nice, and I know who's in the band, because it's like a punk supergroup. I was like, that's awesome.
Yeah, no, Vanishing Life's got Walter from Quicksand and Gorilla Biscuits and Rival Schools, but it's also got two guys from Trail of the Dead, Bad Religion, Gwar, like it's just this crazy, weird supergroup, and they were really good live. So the album just came out, so check that out.
What percentage of the audience did we lose just then? Was it more or less than G.I. Joe?
I think more. So, all right. So if you've got any questions, you can email us at contact@iFanboy. Let us know who you are, where you're from, how long you thought about it, and keep your head up, John. It's going to be okay.
Quick plugs. Batman Return of the Caped Crusader podcast came out last week. Me and Ryan Haupt and our special guest Ron Richards talked about the animated film set in the Batman 66 world. We had a good time doing that. We had a lot of fun watching it. So check that out.
We did.
Behind the show on the feed. Also, go back a little further. You can find the Doctor Strange podcast in which Ron and Mike Romo, who told me afterwards, I thought you were going to be on the show. apparently, you had made it clear it was just the two of you. You kept expecting me to show up.
Which he didn't say a word to me about.
They talked about Doctor Strange, which I still haven't seen yet, but I'm looking forward to hopefully seeing soon.
Cool. And we got more podcasts coming soon. We're going to be doing a Booksplode, thanks to the patrons who've supported us on Patreon. We've added a Talksplode or a Booksplode once a month, and last month we had that great Talksplode Josh did, which you can still get in the feed, by the way, with Mark Russell from Flintstones. We're going to be doing a Booksplode. We're going to be talking about The Rattler by Jason McNamara and Greg Hinkel, a graphic novel that came out on Image a few months ago, but we're big Greg Hinkel fans, and I'm a big Jason McNamara fan, so we're gonna dive into that book. So you can hear that's going to be coming out some point this month. And then close to the holidays, some point probably before Christmas, you're going to get our podcast about Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, which I'm sure Josh is very excited to do.
I am.
I am actually too. I still have not seen any trailers other than the first one.
Me either.
Yeah. I like that. And I'm getting really mad at my friends who are posting pictures of toys and shit. I'm like, I don't want to see it.
So. Also, next week for Thanksgiving's episode, we'll start going through the year-end schedule, which is, if you're a new listener, yeah, it's somewhat unusual to the regular schedule. So look for that next week.
All right.
Also, look for a possibly shorter show next week. We'll see. We'll find out.
Oh, well, there we go.
That's something you can look forward to, you know, like Elvis. Head over to ifanboy.com to comment on this show or the other shows or comment on things, old shows, whatever. You can talk about this week's books. You can talk about what we missed,
you,
what
you,
we didn't.
You can't comment on old shows, but that's okay.
All right. They don't know that. Yeah. And, of course, you can find all of our other years of content that we put up there, which people are listening through again, like the same way that I was watching Sopranos again, which is weird. There's better ways to spend your time, but. Thank you. You can also follow us at facebook.com/ifanboy or at ifanboy on Twitter. And you can follow us individually at Jay Flanagan, at CS Kilpatrick, or at RonXO. Although you're not getting a lot out of that right now. So there is that.
And if you like the show, write a review on iTunes, please. Or better yet, before the better yet, just write a review about any show you enjoy. Any podcast. As the year winds down, if you can't contribute financially to your favorite show, just take a few seconds to write a review on iTunes. Every show you listen to will definitely appreciate that. And better yet, tell your friends. Introduce your friends to podcasts. It's been 10 years now, and some people still don't know or listen to podcasts. So tell them about it. Tell them what you listen to. Tell them what you enjoy. And especially the moms. All the Americans are going to be sitting down next. Instead of arguing about politics, talk about podcasts at the dinner table next week.
It's a good way to change the subject. That's a good idea. Yeah. You go, hey.
In the middle of the yelling, just say, hey, did you guys hear that episode of iFanboy where they couldn't stop talking about Elvis and G.I. Joe? Yeah, it was terrible.
Just like Elvis would.
Exactly.
That's it for this week's show.
Yes, and in the States, have a great, happy Thanksgiving to everybody in the United States, and hope everybody's well at the first of the holiday season begins. I can't wait to eat. Until then, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
Just not going to eat till then?
Nope.
Were those Elvis's last words?
I can't wait to eat.
You know, just like me. Just go and let me blue. Well, the heat was on one moonlight.